Oh, kia ora whānau. So, as we've just said, we're going to try something a little bit different because in talking about this Maka thing, the Taku Tau Moana stuff that we've been posting on the Facebook page and on the website about over the last couple of months, we realised that it's got a very deep and long history. So we thought a kōrero with a couple of the key Maka team members about that history might be really useful. So here with me I've got Anthony. Anthony, just give us a little bit of an introduction as to who you are and what your role is.
Kia ora whānau. My name's Anthony Pātete. So I was brought on as the tribal historian, even though I was there at the very beginning of the process. So once I left the Trust Board, I was asked to gather the evidence together. That's where I fit in terms of this engagement. So
okay, and Andrew?
Akati, kia ora, Ngāti Kuata. My name's Andrew Irwin, and I'm a lawyer with quite a bit of background in Treaty of Waitangi and Taku Tau Moana things, and I was brought on to help Ngāti Kuata with their applications, seeking rights for the Taku Tau Moana.
So this all goes right back to 2003, and I didn't realise that Ngāti Kuata was involved in a court case that became a very, very public event, the foreshore and seabed protests that we saw. So maybe Anthony, for a start, can you tell us what Ngāti Kuata's role was back then before the foreshore seabed thing blew up? Or Andrew, maybe you're the better one to talk to about that.
Yeah, Ngāti Kuata and other Te Tauihu iwi were leading the charge seeking recognition that the foreshore and seabed of the Marlborough Sounds was Māori customary land. The argument was the Māori Land Court had never determined title to the foreshore and seabed, and they said it had the jurisdiction to do it. And the Māori Land Court agreed. It said, yep, we can do this. And the Crown contested that, got to the Court of Appeal, and the Court of Appeal said, yeah, the Māori Land Court's right. It has the jurisdiction to decide whether or not the Marlborough Sounds are Māori customary land. And the government of the day brought this to an end and enacted the Foreshore and Seabed Act of 2004 to stop all of that and instead put in place a very different regime where Māori could seek some kinds of recognition for their rights in the Taku Tau Moana.
But it was very different than what Ngāti Kuata and the other iwi of Te Tauihu were arguing about the Marlborough Sounds in the first place, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. They were seeking ownership of the foreshore and seabed of the Marlborough Sounds, and the Foreshore and Seabed Act precluded any of that happening at all. It vested all title to the foreshore and seabed around New Zealand in the Crown.
Anthony, as an historian, how valid do you think the claim that went to the Māori Land Court was when you look at the history of the people in the Marlborough Sounds and in Golden Bay?
I think it was very relevant. When you look at Kuata, we really are a seafaring people. And the importance of the Taku Tau Moana, which we took for granted as just being ours anyway in that sense, was now being taken away from us. And certainly within the Foreshore and Seabed Act when that came, or the bill when it came into play, Kuata put in their submission objecting to that. They wanted to have the opportunity to have their rights tested. And so that began that whole journey to get us through to the next stage.
Then we had a change of government and we ended up with another piece of legislation in 2011. Now that's the Marine Coastal Area Taku Tau Moana Act of 2011, and that's the one that we're actually dealing with now. What's different in that piece of law from the foreshore and seabed law that Labor passed?
One of the things the 2011 law did was it repealed the Foreshore and Seabed Act, and it had a clause that said any foreshore and seabed that was vested in the Crown is no longer vested in the Crown. And it actually says that the foreshore and seabed is owned by no one. And what the new law does is it gives whānau hapū and iwi the chance to make an application to seek rights in relation to the Takutai Moana, either directly with the Crown or through the High Court.
So that was 2011. Jump forward a couple of years to 2013, that's where Ngāti Kōrata really starts to get into gear. What happened then?
So Matthew Hippolyte, who was working in the office as the Ataio manager, decided that we should put an application in. And so they formed a little working group. There was Matthew, there was Roma Hippolyte, Uncle George Elkington, John Dobson and myself. And basically we put together an application to the Crown for direct engagement. And we spent the next 3 years looking for a terms of engagement so we could actually begin the journey of negotiating with the Crown in terms of getting our rights recognised.
And Andrew, there was a key date on this process in 2017, wasn't there?
So this is 4 years after Ngāti Kōrata have made their application. The law said all groups that want to make an application must make it by a certain date in 2017. And in 2017, all the groups around the country fired in numerous applications to the Crown and the High Court seeking customary marine title around New Zealand. And Ngāti Kōrata was ahead of the pack at that time. They'd been directly engaging with the government for a good at least 3 years solidly, 3 to 4 years. And so when that happened, Ngāti Kōrata were already well underway.
So that's some pretty interesting history about where this all came from. What was the lead up to the Maka stuff that we're talking to whānau about now? Next time we'll have a talk about what the process was and talk about it in the application in a little more detail. You might have noticed that on the Facebook page we'd ask for people to put in their pātai. If you've got any queries about Maka and what it's about, you know, post them up there on the Facebook page and we will answer them. We'll do another session soon on answering people's pātai on that.